the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers, yes, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. With me in this show, episode 475, recording on a Thursday night, is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and he is also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, it is our preview picks, predictions, and prop bets show as we are in week 7. This is an interesting week, right? Because it's not going to happen, but Kyler Murray's on his way back. And that's not really what we're talking about this show. There is a part of me that would like the Cardinals to activate him this week and to give him make him start. He starts at quarterback and gets two series like in the preseason, then before turning it over to Josh Dobbs. There's a part of me that would love to see that happen. I don't think it's going to happen. Jonathan Gannon all but said that Kyler's not playing. Well, he's definitely not starting, but being said that, you know, Dobbs bouncing back, I say he's gonna come back and he's gonna play well against Seattle. If he's saying that Dobbs is playing, that means he's starting. But the fact that the clock has started officially, I'm excited. But that's not what we're gonna talk about, Seth. But how excited are you? Has anything changed? You get Buddha designated for return. You've got Kyler designated to return. Does it feel like to you that we're moving into kind of a new, kind of the next phase?
Yeah, it does. And it feels, like you said, it's exciting. It is kind of what we were hoping to get to. We knew it wasn't going to be sooner, but we also knew it wasn't going to be later, barring any setbacks. So it was just a continuation of waiting. And that was kind of the worst part, because I feel like both you and I knew that there was more and better coming, but it just feels like it was taking so long to get there. And like you said, it's still not here, but the light's kind of at the end of the tunnel finally, right?
Yeah. And that's where we're at. Seattle week on the road against the Seahawks, who are 3-2, have already had their bye, played the Cincinnati Bengals last weekend, and were the second team after the Bengals found themselves. It was an ugly game, but the Bengals came away with a 17-13 win. In this edition of the show, this is our preview predictions and prop bets show, which means we're going to look at the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to talk about keys and matchups that we're looking forward to, and then we're going to make our predictions and talk about prop bets. And I do have a third show lined up, so the bonus episode. I wasn't able to get one lined up last week, but Tim Weaver, Seahawks Wire managing editor, I will have that show dropping on Saturday morning. And so you'll get our preview, and then you also get a preview from the perspective and predictions from the other side of the opponent's side. So Seth, let's get started with the Seahawks, a team that is 3-2. And you looked at what they did last year, because they surprised everyone last year, although they did fade. This is, although I'm not sure, as I look at this team and look over the games that they played, I'm not sure exactly what the team is per se, because they've had inconsistencies on both sides of the ball. But if there's anything we know about that, they are and will be in the playoff hunt, it feels like, all year, because they have some good offensive play, they have some good defensive play, and then sometimes they're bad on both sides of the ball.
Well, and it's really interesting because I don't know how to explain that. I mean, the easy way is they're a complete 180 from what they were last year defensively, which is baffling. The more fun way to put it is they're like the wrong way mirror of what they were last year. I mean, you look last year, this is a team that couldn't stop you and I running the football. They were 30th, I believe, in yards allowed, 26th in yards per. I mean, they almost allowed 5 yards per carry last year. They were so bad against the run. And then they were slightly better than average against the pass. I mean, 15th in net yard per average, 13th in yards allowed, 10th, you know, and then they had a bunch of interceptions. And then this year, it's completely flipped. It's literally the polar opposite. They are 5th in yards, 1st in yards allowed rushing, 3.2 yards per carry, and 28th in yards allowed in passing. Like, what is going on? And then, you know, you look at their offense. Geno's obviously regressed after a career year.
Well, right, and he does. He looks closer. I guess it's not like he fell off in the second half last year. He did. And he's looking more like, he's not looking like, you know, star, but he's also still looks like a starting quarterback.
Well, and he looks, I mean, it's just, it's one of those situations where you look at him from a raw number standpoint, obviously, versus Josh Dobbs. And quite frankly, Dobbs has probably been just as good, right? Like, you know, again, from a raw number standpoint, 1,215 yards for Dobbs, you know, Geno's at 1,172. Obviously, one less game played is just alluded to. But, you know, you and I kind of take that first game from Dobbs with a grain of salt, right? Like, that was a, what, 10-day? 6 practices and then he came in. But he's the one thing he's still doing, the one thing that has crossed over to this year is he's not turning the ball over. And the way you can, you know, identify that as somebody, you know, is his interception percentage is still less than 2%. He's at 1.8%. He was at 1.9% last year. So he's,
by the way, that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And so he's not at 30 touchdowns last year, you know, again, 5 games, but he's only on pace for 17 touchdowns this year. I mean, that's a huge regression from 30. Like you said, kind of more in line with what he was doing in his early career with the Jets, where he was at, you know, 12, 13 in those 13 games. But, you know, he's still completing a high percentage, just under 68% of his passes. It's just not the same way. His yards per attempt is down. His average yards per attempt is down. His yards per game, obviously, down. His quarterback ratings down. His QBR is down. It's just everything across. But you know what's crazy? He's on pace to be sacked less. Like, it's just, there's something that hasn't been right with Seattle this year offensively, and they get the Cardinals this week. So they probably get a chance to get better, right?
As we've talked about, well, we mentioned in the other show, DK Metcalf isn't practiced a couple of days. So that means start Tyler Lockett, right? Start Tyler Lockett.
And watch out for Jackson Smith and Jigba to have his first, you know, big game of his career.
Too. That too, especially between Jalen Thompson looking like he'll probably miss this week and Antonio Hamilton. So they might need to they better not call on me to cover anybody in the slot because, yeah. But we're almost there, guys. We're almost needing me to play in the slot. And you, that's, I mean, no, that's a bad idea. You've got Ken Walker with 345 rushing yards, averaging 4.2 per carry through 5 games.
Well, and that's the other crazy thing is, you know, you look at, again, their last year, and it's easy to compare and then try to pick, but it's like, you know, Kenneth Walker last year averaged near, you know, over 4.5 yards per carry. Rashad Penny averaged over 6 yards per carry. DJ Dallas averaged over 5 yards per carry. You know, Kenneth Walker had over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns. This year, it's just been, again, it's not bad. Like, I don't want anybody to think I'm saying it's bad, but it's just been less explosive, less effective. It's been very kind of lethargic. It's not explosive.
Well, especially considering the fact of how good Walker was last season.
And, yeah, he was fantastic.
And absolutely how great their top two receivers are. And if you add Smith and Jigba to that group, you are going to be hard-pressed to find a better trio of receivers than DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and then the rookie Jackson Smith and Jigba.
I think this is the craziest stat. This is, to me, the craziest stat this year. Their longest play from scrimmage is a screen to Noah Fant for 51 yards thrown by Drew Locke. So the longest play from scrimmage from their starters is 36 yards. So there's just no big plays whatsoever. Like, just nothing is getting down the field. They're not able to. And so you look at, like, last year, they had 7 players with their own long receiving or rushing longer than that. And so, like, eight. So there's nothing explosive about this offense right now. And that is kind of where you're seeing this, is that it's just a very methodical kind of plodding. You know, you look at their numbers, they're 14th in yards and 16th in yards given up. Like, they're just a very average team right now, you know, and so all of that plays into how they've looked. They're still scoring well. I mean, and a lot of that comes from,
well, their three wins they did.
Yeah.
13 points. They only had 13 points each against the Bengals and the Rams in the two losses, and then it was 37-37-24. Defensively, that they, you know, they started bad. They gave up 30-31-27, but if you look at their yards allowed, it's dropped every single week. 426, 418, 378, 248, and they lost to the Bengals only allowing 214 total yards, but that's because they turned the ball. And Geno Smith threw a pair of interceptions last week. They had almost 400 yards of offense, and the two interceptions ended up being the difference. But yeah, that defense has just been, it's steadily gotten better. Now, granted, I mean, say what you want. I mean, they sort of basically, you know what they did what defensively. You know when they got right. It was against the Giants.
Right.
It was against the Giants. And the truth is, the Bengals offensively have been, we look at that. Now, granted, they lost to the Bengals. The Bengals have looked abysmal offensively, except against the Cardinals, much like the Giants. And so, So they have offensive firepower that's just hasn't clicked. They're banged up this year. Coming into this game, they are banged up. They're down their rookie running back, Zach Charbonnet. They're down. Well, it looks like Evan Brown will probably be out, but their entire starting offensive line is on the injury report, although it probably looks like just the center will be out. DK's missed 2 days of practice. Don't know what that means for Seattle, because he's a guy.
For him, yeah, it usually doesn't mean anything.
But he's also
been a guy that hasn't been as effective this year.
He's been banged up. His body type and style, like, he's starting to, as dynamic as he can be, I think it's starting to affect him Like from the receiver position, kind of like George Kittle, like his production's gone down. He's still a very, very good player and can do other things like in the blocking game, but his like 1,400 yard years appear to be done.
You know who DK kind of reminds me of?
Who?
David Boston.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
You look at that, you know, obviously the rookie year wasn't as dynamic for David, but over 1,100 yards his second year, almost 1,600 yards, first team All-Pro his third year, and then
The freak athleticism, body type, body size, that's a good comp right there.
Yeah, and so it's just, you know, and DK did it for 4 years. You know, he was able to put up 4,000 yards over his first 4 years, but now you're starting to see that kind of, I mean, 337 yards in five games, that's just not very DK Metcalf-like. Like, that's just, you know, that's just not what we're used to seeing from him. And so we'll see how it breaks down and where he ends up this season. But when he's able to play his snaps, he's still really effective. He's just not, you know, he just hasn't been as dynamic as you would expect from a guy that looked like he was going to be, you know, the next Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
After his second year.
Defensively, though, and something I really like looking at here is they're not like at the top of sacks, but they've got 19 sacks. They have 10 different players that have sacks, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 who have multiple sacks. They've got Boye Mafe with 3 sacks. You've got Jaron Reed with 3 sacks, doing a fantastic job. Well, and that, you know, that run defense, they brought back Bobby Wagner. They brought back Jaron Reed. They signed Draymond Jones. That's huge. And then the fact that they got Uchenna Nwosu, who's a very underrated player as well, especially when it comes to, but yeah, they've got Mafe and Reed with 3 sacks each. They've got Draymond. They've got Nwosu. They've got Jordan Brooks and Bobby Wagner. And also Devon Witherspoon, the first-round rookie with 2 sacks each. And that's on top of, then they've got that secondary, their cornerbacks. That's a very talented group. Now, Tariq Woolen, now known as Reek Woolen. We saw how fantastic he was as a rookie. Devon Witherspoon is a stud coming out of college. Like, obviously, he's still a rookie. And they're managing to do this with Jamal Adams still being useless so far.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those situations that they just, like you said, they have a lot of talent. And, you know, some of it's luck, right? You mentioned Tariq Woolen, a guy that was a, fifth-round pick. Like, him turning into a really good player has helped, right? You know, it's not something you can bank on that you get a fifth-round kid that ends up being a high-level starter. Julian Love, their safety, was a free agent they signed, but he was a fourth-round pick by the New York Giants. You know, he's playing really well in this defense. Obviously, Quandre Diggs has been really good for them for the last couple seasons. But even a guy like Trey Brown, right? Like, their secondary is a bunch of fourth, fifth-round guys that have just stepped up. But like we were talking about, it's their run defense this year and how much better they're playing behind or in front of Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks and giving them chances. And like you said, Uchenna Nwosu is probably their best pass rusher now. And he's only got 2 sacks. I mean, I know Jaron Reed, I think, leads the team, right? And Boye Mafe is really coming into his own. But they just do a lot of different things. I mean, Devon Witherspoon's tied for second on the team with 2 sacks. Like, they just do a lot of different things with a lot of different players, and it creates havoc. You know, and the interesting thing is that from a points against, they're second half of the league. I mean, 18th in points against, but like you said, their last 2 games, they've allowed less than 250 yards
Yeah.
to the Giants and the Bengals. And it's really been, again, their ability to force turnovers. I mean, their win over the Lions, the Lions only lost this year. They forced three turnovers. Their win over the Giants, they forced three turnovers. Even in their loss to Cincy, where it was a really close game, they forced a turnover. That they just didn't win the turnover battle in that game, and that's why they lost, right? And the only game that they've lost the turnover battle other than that was against the Carolina Panthers, and that's the only reason the Panthers scored 27 points, because they, you know, they helped them out a little bit. So it's just one of those situations where you look at it that they're doing enough defensively, whereas you look at what the Cardinals are, we know that their defense is going to struggle, but they just can't do enough offensively to give their defense a break and help them out. And that's kind of what the issue's been and what this game is really going to come down to.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Syria podcast, the best our Cardinals talk of the web, it's time to move to our another preview section, but this is where we talk about matchups and keys to this game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syria. We're back on the Rise Up Syria podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Keys and matchups. The matchups one's a little bit tough. Let's, if we can talk some matchups, the one that we're going to have to look at, obviously, is at the receiver position, because the Cardinals secondary, even if they get Buda Baker back, they're not in a happy place when it comes to their defenders. Jalen Thompson, who plays in the slot, looks like he's going to be out probably. Antonio Hamilton, their backup slot, he's missed 2 days with a groin and probably not going to be able to play. So it's going to be interesting to see what their plan is in the slot. I'm assuming Garrett Williams comes back. This game is going to have a role of some sort. If I had to guess, that we're going to see Marco and Keytrell. Although Keytrell's been limited, I'm assuming he will be good for the game. I'm guessing that with Keytrell, because it didn't affect him during the game, that it's one of those, they're going to limit, and he'll be full on Friday. We'll find out on the injury report, probably about the time you guys hear this show. So they'll go with Marco and Keytrell, and then probably slide Keytrell inside, and then use a combo of Starling Thomas and Garrett Williams. Just probably Garrett Williams will play the dime role, I would guess, this week.
I mean, can we just fast forward until Kyler's back? Like, it's sad to say that, but you just know, especially against a team, even without, if DK doesn't play, it's just going to be so tough, man.
Right.
It's
just Tyler Lockett against in the slot against, I'm guessing it'll be Keytrell. Whew. Well, and you look at Kupp, who plays in the slot. Jamar Chase played a little bit in the slot, which is what kind of got them into trouble. That's going to be a tough matchup. And then if DK plays, DK and Marco, watch out for that one. Although I think, and you know what I bet? I bet they both pick up two penalties in the game.
Right.
DK is one of the most penalized. He is the most penalized receiver in the NFL. And yeah, I could see chippiness on that. I bet they both get penalized at least once on each other.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. You know, and if they put Keytrell on DK, there might be a fist fight. So it'll be fun to watch, though, right?
Hey, yes. Yeah, that'll be interesting at least. You always look at the edge production. The Seattle's left tackle, Charles Kloss, been pretty solid. They've got, instead of Abe Lucas, who got hurt in the offseason, really tough for him after having a fantastic rookie year. Jake Curran is the starting right tackle, and he is a little banged up. So we're looking at those edge guys in particular, so Demakeji and Gardeck against Curran.
And the Cardinals have done a fantastic job of scheming up pressure. They just don't have anybody that creates pressure, right? And that's what the issue becomes. And so they have to find a way. They have to find a way to continue to get after the quarterback, but do it against, be able to rush four, because, and even five, like that's what the problem becomes, is that too often they have to bring five or six to get pressure. And when that's happening, they just don't have good enough corners and defensive backs at all. I mean, we just kind of lightheartedly, seriously made fun of it for the last 5 minutes. But it's true. I mean, it's just unfortunately true. And they have to find a way and to win. And I just don't know if anybody's on the roster. Do you? I mean, like, there's probably nobody that's going to step up into that spot to create that consistently.
I mean, you'd hope the Ojulari can become that.
Yeah, and we talked about him a little bit earlier this week, right, on the last episode. I won't go fully into it, but it's interesting how they're slow playing him into the system.
Well, I think that is mostly because of the lack of training camp reps.
Right, he missed. That's what I mean. He missed all of training camp, and they're basically like slow playing him.
Yeah, and so, which is why I think it's like, even though Garrett Williams probably comes back, I imagine his role will not be large. That it will be at best dime back, which would be what Antonio Hamilton was playing before Jalen Thompson got hurt. You want to see how the defensive and how the offensive interior, especially with Elijah Wilkinson, if I had to guess, because he had a neck injury pop up where he did not practice at all on Thursday, which means we could be seeing Dennis Daly in the lineup. Jaron Reed against that interior is going to be interesting to watch. Which side of the defense does Nwosu and Mafe end up lining up most of the time?
Let's take a look. Mafe is lining up. He's playing both outside linebacker spots. So he's rotating pretty steadily. 84 on the right, 74 on the left. So pretty much either side. Let's see where. So I'm guessing Nwosu's doing the same, unless he just doesn't come off the field. Nwosu 113 to 96. So yeah, it's basically
they just off. So
maybe it's a strength thing. We'd have to really break it down to see that. So maybe one of them's playing on the strong side where the tight end lines up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm guessing. And like I said, we're guessing, but when it's a 50-50 split like that, or near 50-50 split like that, it probably means they're lining up to the initial strength of the defense offense, excuse me.
Looking at potential keys, I think.
Do you think, I was going to ask you real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, cause we mentioned him. He's been kind of a revelation this year in his second stint there. Do you think that the interior, especially that left guard position where Jaron Reed lines up 50% of the time, I mean, he plays both left and right defensive tackle. I'm not so much worried about Will Hernandez. I think that'll be a great battle. But when he lines up on the defensive right, you know, the offensive left, can Elijah Wilkinson or Dennis Daly handle him? Or is this a game where, I mean, he's already got, what I say, two sacks on the season? Like, is this a game where he doubles the sack total?
Ooh. And he's like...
But he's got three on the season. So, I mean, and that's nearly a career high for him.
He had the one anomaly year, didn't he have?
Yeah, like 10 and a half.
10 and a half sacks. But that's so that showed what he could do. That was like a Jordan Phillips. That's a very Jordan Phillips type year,
right,
that he had.
And then, yeah, I mean, 1.5, 1.5, 10.5, 2, 6.5, 2.5, 2.5. But he's got three this year. So
yeah,
like,
he does.
And so, like, it's almost like, and I'd love to see, you know, obviously we can go back and look now. I'd love to see what games those sacks were. You know, were they against the Cardinals? Because that's the 2018 Cardinals. I mean, that is a bad team. And so, like, how did that all work out? Because this is just, I mean, it's just a guy that is a very talented player, but he's just never done that. But this year he's got 3 and 5 games, and it really seems like he's going to have a game against the Cardinals based on who their talent is across from him. And by the way, he had 3 of those 10.5 sacks against the Cardinals in 2 games.
Of course he did. Of course if he did. Keys. I think key number one, I mean, obviously we say this every week, they can't turn the ball over. They're not that good on offense to be able to survive turnovers. But the only semblance of success the Cardinals has if they start quickly. They can't just get field goals. Like, expect to be 9-6 at halftime. They have to score points early. And you know, looking at Seattle's games, so they've given up 30 points twice, and they gave up 27 to Andy Dalton and the Panthers. That was, Bryce Young was out that game. And their defense has looked tremendous, but against abysmal offenses. So,
and to be fair, that describes the Arizona Cardinals.
Yes. Well, that's it. They're abysmal in the second half. They've shown that they can be good in the first half.
I mean, the biggest thing is they can't, and, you know, and we'd never like to crap on Josh Dobbs. It's not fun. But they can't get to a point where they have to turn the game over to Josh Dobbs. And
without James Conner, that feels like it's going to be an impossibility.
Right. But that's just the reality. They can't need to rely. And, you know, last week it was simple. Josh Dobbs missed 2 throws that if he hits the game, the Cardinals probably lose that game. They probably lose that game 26, but they lose that game 26-23 or 21 or something like that.
And they get the backdoor cover that, right. that Seth was looking for.
But instead, he just misses 2. And so that's what you can't have because, like we said before, that's just who Josh Dobbs is. It's not a shot at Dobbs. It's not like a hateful thing at Dobbs. It's not a negative thing about Dobbs. That's just who he is. He's just not a guy that is able to make those plays consistently. And so when you're looking at it and, you know, you go down the list, right? You look at it, they get the ball to start an 8-play, 38-yard drive that results in a, 900-yard field goal or whatever it was in that,
yes.
You know, 55-yard field goal. And then they get a stop and you're like, okay, that's not bad. And then they get 40 yards, but they have to punt. Well, they get 40 yards because they miss a throw. And it's like, you just can't have that. You're not good enough. And perfection is unfair, right? Like, it's just because it's not realistic. But the reality is if they don't do things perfectly, they're not good enough to miss opportunities. And so that's what the perfection is. The perfection isn't that, like, you have to get every block, you have to make every tackle, you have to, you know, but when you have open opportunities, you have to hit them. And that's the key. Don't turn the ball over. Don't put your quarterback in a position where he's got to make throws that he's just not capable of making. And then when you have throws that you should be able to make, you have to hit them. You have to make those throws because that keeps you ahead of things and that allows you the opportunity to make plays. And you can look at this game against the Rams and it can be a precursor or hopefully a way to clean things up. But, you know, you look at that second drive against the Rams, it's 3rd and 2 and Dobbs takes a 13-yard sack. 3rd and 2, and then you're in 4th and 15. He was at the LA 40. Like they're in go for it territory, and he takes a 13-yard sack. Like, that's just unacceptable. And so those are, whether it's turnovers or large negative plays, that's what they can't have in this game if they just want to compete.
Yeah, it's they got to score. They got to protect the ball. There's one stat. Okay, this is one thing defensive that's got to change. Do you remember that the first three games of the season, they had 23 pass breakups or passes defenses? That like that basically that got they got their hands on 23 passes in the first three games of the season, which I think was second in the league. You know how many pass breakups they had in the last three games?
As many as you and I. Right?
One. They have one.
Oh.
Because they get the one interception. They got the one interception, which counts as a pass defense. They've had one in the last three games. You can't do that.
And by the way, there's no way to
win games or have any sort of success defensively. And if you look at the last three games, they were just carved up with the pass game.
And even the one they got was a guy that tripped. It wasn't like they made a play on the ball. Like it was more like right place, right time. But that goes back to the other thing of like who that we talked about earlier, who can win up front to cause I get it. Their secondary's bad. I truly, truly understand that. But at the same time, like you gotta give your team a little something. Like you gotta bring some pressure or give them a little something. Because
well, that was something that was just so promising through the first three games is they were flying to the ball, they were getting their hands on the football, and I guess we haven't addressed this. They're not flying to the football with the same intensity right now.
No, and they're not. And, you know, obviously Matthew Stafford's one of the best passers in the game. I mean, he just is. But here's the thing. 28 dropbacks. He was only pressured 10 times. That's, you know, you're not going to win on that. And then the crazy thing, his time to throw when he was under pressure was over 3 seconds.
Oh, man.
So it was always late pressure, which means what? Somebody's getting open after 3 seconds. and so that's what the problem becomes, is that they're just not getting fast pressure. Now, again, fantastic. 18 of Stafford's attempts came out in less than 2 seconds. Like he was getting rid of the ball quickly. That's just what he and Sean McVay do. They're just fantastic at it. And a lot of it was right in the middle, short of the field, right? But when you look at it, these guys have to find a way to get pressure on the quarterback. They have to, because if they don't, then we already know they're not good in terms of coverage. But when they have to cover for 3 seconds, they're definitely not going to be good. And so that, you know, it just comes back to pressure and creating pressure and winning with 4 or 5 guys and not having to manufacture with 6, because the sacks in situations look good, but it's not the 28 dropbacks. It's the 24 attempts that are really, really easy, right?
Yeah. It's just, it's so much, so difficult. And it feels like if you've been listening to this season, this has been a roller coaster, because we went from, yeah, they're going to be bad, but I don't think they're going to be that bad. Oh, my goodness, they're actually not that bad. Oh, wait, they're bad. and in fairness, they keep losing players. And we've just been waiting for Kyler Murray to get back and all this.
But we've also known that was something that was unsustainable, right? Like,
yeah,
they were so razor thin from just an NFL talent perspective that it just didn't matter.
Well, and Geno Smith and Josh Dobbs was playing near his, like he had a couple games where he was literally playing the best you could ever expect him to play.
And you can't expect him
to play like that week after week. It's just not feasible.
No, and that's the reality. I mean, when you have a player, I mean, and I don't want to say it's similar to Geno Smith, but it's similar in terms of just a small, you know, just a small sample size. But Geno's regression, again, the big thing is he's not turning the ball over, but he's not making the dynamic plays he was last year. Geno's regression back to who he has been, or better, slightly better than who he has been, and then Dobbs' regression to back to who he has been. Like, those things, like, most players don't change in their career, right? Like, they're just who they are after they have a big enough sample size. Very few guys you know, redefine themselves in their career. I mean, I'm trying to think of one that really, I mean, maybe Doug Flutie, like a guy that just didn't make it and kind of bounced around and then had a nice, you know, career kind of at the tail end. But most guys don't do that. I mean,
people have to go back a ways to, like, Rich Gannon.
Gannon's a great one, but yeah, most people say Kurt Warner. It's like, no, he never got a chance, and then when he got a chance, he took advantage.
Yeah,
like,
well, because he was great. He was great. Like, he started, like, he got his first playing time, MVP. Then it looked like he was wasting away, and then he got another chance, and he was great again. So, yeah, there's been a few flash in the pan type, but this is I'm going back a long time. Steve Beuerlein. Guy that was a quarterback starter for the Cardinals in the early 90s, for the Panthers, ended up having a Pro Bowl year. But these are guys that have flashed the pants. Chris Chandler developed into a, you know, he took the Falcons to the Super Bowl. But no, you know, quarterbacks tend to be who they are. And if they flash, it's not for an entire season.
Right. And so he had that fantastic three-game stretch, and the last two games have been closer to what he has been for his career. You know, and that's why I said, at the end of the day, you don't want to put this on Dobbs, because he is who he is. And you've mentioned it, can't turn the ball over, but at the same time, you can't ask him to do too much.
Right.
And those staggering fourth quarter numbers where he's just abysmal as a player in the fourth quarter, that's just – unfortunately what you're going to get when you get to that situation. Like, there's not going to be like, Josh Dobbs is now Tom Brady in the fourth quarter. Like, no, like, he's going to be Josh Dobbs in the fourth quarter. Like,
yeah,
he can have a good,
and it's sad. Like, no, James Conner is kind of the way to protect Josh Dobbs, is to have a runner like James Conner, and yeah, you've got Keontae Ingram, Damon Williams, and Imari DiMercato. That's not promising. That's just
no,
tough.
Not at all.
Like, you might be able to piece together a running game with them, but that is different than having a James Conner finishing the game. It really
right,
is.
100% is.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sirhood podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about it. So let's make our predictions. Predictions and prop bets to talk about. That's coming up next on Rise of Sirhood. We're back on the Rise of Seaward podcast, Best Air Cardinals Talk on the Web. What do we think is going to happen in this game? And let's talk prop bets, and then we'll make our predictions, I guess. And then I guess kind of what we're going to, our prop bet predictions will sort of give away what we think the final outcome will end up being. So I, for my best bet, like a bet to make for every team this week, and I looked into this a little bit, so I'm gonna go with the trend, especially after how they fell apart last couple of weeks in the second half. I said take the first half money line on the Cardinals. That's been a good play. The full game money line is +280, but look, the Cardinals are +210. They're +210 on the first half money line. They're 4-2. They've won the first half four times. The Seahawks have been trailing at half. They've trailed at halftime three times out of their five games. And so I like that. The Seahawks then turn things on the second half, which jives with the Cardinals and their 98-30 second half deficit. But I do like the first half money line for the Cardinals at +210. Plus, that's really good money.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback off a plus money sentiment, I really like Kenneth Walker's rushing yards, which is 71.5, I actually think you should take the alternate rushing yards, and I would be comfortable taking 120 plus rushing yards. But if you're a little nervous, take him over 100 rushing yards. It's plus 235. Mm. And the Cardinals have given up in the last.
They gave up 158 to Kyren Williams, 108 to Christian McCaffrey, 122 to Tony Pollard in the last four games.
Yeah, and even Joe Mixon had 81 in that game. So, you know, you look at it, it's probably going to be, they're probably going to be able to run the ball again at will. So I would be very comfortable with Walker over 100 plus yards.
That's a good one. You know, they've got Dobbs at over 22.5 for rushing. I think that is like 2 weeks ago we've had that, but Dobbs in the run game is going to be necessary, especially because he does get himself out of some trouble that way. I'd say take Dobbs over the 22.5 for certain on at minus 110, which is, you know, that's a normal 50-50 type situation. But you look at the quarterback props, passing yards. I don't touch the passing yards. That's too, I don't know.
It just, it lends itself too much to the Cardinals getting behind and then be able to run the ball. It really does. I mean, if you want to look at Dobbs' numbers in the passing game, he has over 225 in only two games. He barely cleared that against the Giants with 228. And then he had 257 against the 49ers. But he's been under 200 yards just as often as he's been over 200 yards. So it's not that 218.5 number is not a number that you really want to play with. Like, that's just, Jess is right on this. Both of these numbers are sucker bets because we just don't know how game flow is going to come out and how it's going to look. And here's one that Jess and I love every week. And they're not offering it on DraftKings. So if you've got it on BetMGM, let me know.
There's no kicking props this week.
There's no kicking props this week, baby. So they've figured out the Arizona Cardinals are where bettors go to make money off of kicking props because they have been crushing. Let me ask you this one. So we talked about what they've done in terms of passing, but at the same time, the Seahawks pass defense, not great, not been great. You know, they've got good players. In the last 2 weeks, as you mentioned, they've really turned it on. 168 yards by the Bengals, 136 yards passing by the New York Football Giants.
But those numbers, like you say, oh, those are eye-popping, but then you have to remember the context. The Giants have just been terrible except for two quarters against the Cardinals, and the Bengals have been terrible except for four quarters against the Cardinals.
And so you look at Marquise Brown's number in this game. His over-under right now is 55.5. You know, he only had 34 last week.
Should have had a gazillion. Should have had a gazillion yards.
On 11 targets. By the way, the last three games, Marquise Brown has 31 targets. Like, I get people saying trade him, but where are you going to go with the football? 31 targets is absurd. Like, you can't trade him unless you're getting a higher than a third round pick, which you probably would get in a compensatory return if he signs elsewhere. So what I wanted to ask was his 55.5. He, with the opportunities that he's had lately, would you take that or is that too high just with what Dobbs has kind of put on the field the last couple of weeks.
I'm gonna say I'd take the over on that, especially because,
it feels like they're gonna be throwing the ball again.
Yes, it does, and I also really like the anytime touchdown for Hollywood at +140 as well. Looking at like kind of the anytime scores for the Cardinals. I think easy money is Tyler Lockett at +100. Tyler Lockett +100. I like Hollywood at +140, and a sneaky one is Zach Ertz at +200. Though bad things happen when Josh Dobbs throws the ball down the field to Zach Ertz, which is why the one touchdown worked because they were inside the 10, so it wasn't a downfield throw.
Right. You might, so on these ones, especially the Lockett one, you might want to look at DraftKings. He's +135. I'm just going to tell you guys, +100 for a receiver is absurdly low. Like it's +135 is actually really low for a receiver because it's such hit and miss. Like running backs, Kenneth Walker's -185, which is,
oh, you know what he is on BetMGM? -275.
Yeah, that is an insane number because what people don't understand is like scoring touchdowns is random. and so they're basically saying there is no way that Kenneth Walker does not score a touchdown in this game. That it's more likely that he scores a touchdown than he doesn't. So that's crazy. And his two touchdown number at +285 is typically what you see most running backs at for one touchdown. So like it is not intuitive to, I mean, it's just it, like I was talking about with those passing yards, it's a sucker bet. Like this is a day where you load up and you're like, I'm just going to put all my money on Kenneth Walker to score a touchdown because it's a sure thing. And then like they go to like Colby Parkinson and Jake Bobo for touchdowns. And you're like, what, where is all my money? So stay away.
So, but yeah, Tyler Lockett, I like +100. That's easy money. I think
I love that one too.
Tyler Lockett +100. I like Hollywood at +140. I'm maybe like, actually I cashed in on the Bengals game for the Ertz anytime touchdown at +275, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't trust it. Never mind.
First touchdown scorer, Kenneth Walker's +340. That's a really good one for anybody. But if you want to get freaky, Hollywood Brown's +1300 first touchdown scorer.
Yeah.
And he should have been the first touchdown scorer.
He should have.
In that game.
Because he's getting open. That's the thing. Hollywood should have so many yards. He has been so open this year and just have not been able to. That they had the one connection, that one 25-yard touchdown throw against Cincinnati. And other than that, it's just been frustrating. If we're looking at, let me see, do they don't have, nope, it's always just tackles and assists. I think it probably Bobby, 8.5 tackles, Bobby Wagner, 8.5 tackles.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. The other interesting one on the defense special teams that we, kind of brushed over. And again, it's tough, but Jaron Reed's +160 to record a quarter of a sack. So I would take Jaron Reed. That's plus money. That's a good bet. The other one I would take is they don't have our man Gardeck on here. Okay. But they do have Dimakaji and Zaven Collins at pretty good plus money. Those are all bets that I like in this game. Again, it's just half a sack, so they a share of a sack. That's
here's
a good
an easy
bet.
One.
Mark,
this is for tackles. Marco Wilson over 4.5. Because he's being targeted so much.
Yeah.
Like he had 5 tackles last week. He had 11, though. He's passed, so he's had 5 or more tackles in 4 of 6 games this year.
Yeah, and he's is that tackles and assist or solo tackles?
Let me see.
That's for draft
tackles and assists. Tackles and assists.
Yeah. So make sure you take the right one. If you're on DraftKings, they have a solo tackle and a tackles plus assist. So just make sure you take the right one, because
you can bet
make
assist
sure.
tackles on BetMGM. Who? What? Yeah, don't bet that ever. don't bet that ever.
Yeah, you can do that here too. So, so I like that bet as well. I think that's a smart one.
Let me see. Anything else worth doing? So with that, let's go with the predictions. Let me hear yours, kind of how it plays out and what the final score you think it is.
Yeah, I wanted to trust one more time a backdoor cover, but it's just been so ugly the last couple games that I just don't see it. I'm taking I like Jess's bet of the first half money line. I can see like a 10-7 Cardinals lead at the half, with them losing 13-28 in that game. So Seahawks win, Seahawks cover, take the under.
And
just four and a half on DraftKings. I don't know what it is on BetMGM.
I believe it's 44 and a half. Oh, this full game. 44 and a half. The over has been friendly to the Cardinals most of the year. I like the front. The first half money line, I'm going to say they're going to lead in going into halftime 13-10. And then they will end up losing 31-20. They will have a better offensive output, but ultimately they will score one second half touchdown and then give up three touchdowns in the second half. 31-20 is how I have that played out. But they do go into halftime with another lead. You can cash in that. You know, you can cash in that money line, the first half money line, and then take the Seahawks to win, to cover, and for the over to hit in this game.
And I know this is super degenerate talk right now, but if you are a person that wagers money on these games, one of the things you want to start really paying attention to, and this is a complete anti-Cardinals thing, and I apologize ahead of time for that, but it's also a smart betting thing. You want to wait until that money line changes in-game live enough that it becomes profitable. So like right now it's minus 395. there are times when that money line will get under minus 200. When that happens, hammer it then, because the likelihood that the Cardinals are going to hold on to a win has really evaporated from Jess and I's soul at this point. And so if you're getting that money, take it.
Yeah. So take the Cardinals on the first half money line. And when they win that, you win that, then you go with the Seahawks money line. Cause that, you know, if the Cardinals go into halftime with the lead, you probably can get you'll definitely get the Seahawks on the final money line. It'll be something like minus 140, right? And that's a very reasonable, that's actually one that you, if it's minus 140 on the money line, that's one you just go in and during the week, you're just like, yep, I'm betting that no matter what. It's not bad money, but it's still profitable enough. So you might be able to win. So if you can, I don't know if you could, maybe, well, you could parlay the first half and the full game. It just isn't going to be nearly as profitable right now because you got plus 210 and then it's minus 350 on BetMGM. But you might have to do two separate bets for that because you.
What I meant by parlay is just take that money and like let it ride, but put it on the Seahawks in the second half.
Definitely. Absolutely. And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. This has been our preview picks and predictions and prop bets show. Episode 475, we will have another one drop with Seahawks Wire managing editor Tim Weaver, friend of the show now, who's come on for a couple of off-season previews. We will have that dropping on Saturday. Seth and I will be back on Tuesday to talk about, so you'll probably hear it on Wednesday, to talk about what happens in Seattle and whether or not we can expect Kyler to come back against the Ravens. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be back very soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Team Red! Red!